This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Los Angeles, November 2019. That's the opening shot of the iconic 1982 sci-fi thriller Blade Runner. In the movie, 2019 LA is an industrial wasteland. Harrison Ford plays Rick Deckard, a former police officer tracking down bioengineered humans known as replicants.
I was looking for six replicants in a city of 106 million people.
You ever see this girl, huh?
Never seen her. Buzz love.
What I didn't know was they were looking for me.
Okay, well, we are now going to talk about what the movie got right and wrong about Los Angeles 2019 with William Bibbiani, film critic and co-host of the podcast Cancel Too Soon and critically acclaimed, and our very own Blade Runner nerd.
Oh, I love me some Blade Runner.
First of all, why is it called Blade Runner? Because the original novel by Philip K. Dick was called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
I interviewed one of the screenwriters of this when Blade Runner 2049 came out. And he was talking about how there was a concern that Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep didn't really sound like a summer blockbuster.
Guess not.
No, it's a little heady and poetic. And maybe that's not going to really sell this big, expensive sci-fi movie. And so they went back to this phrase that they had come up with. I don't remember if it's from Philip K. Dick's original story, but it's certainly something they had in the room, where the character Harrison Ford plays is a detective who hunts replicants, and those are extremely powerful androids that look just like human beings. And it's an incredibly dangerous job. And it's so dangerous that the metaphor was, it's like running on the edge of a knife, hence a Blade Runner. Mm. It sounds cool, but you probably shouldn't get too hung up on the title.
Okay, let's get hung up on the beginning with the title Los Angeles 2019.
Yeah.
Because that Los Angeles is one filled with smokestacks. It's dark. It's teeming. 106 million people.
Oh, yeah.
So lots of people there.
Fair amount.
Set the scene for us. What does Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, what does Los Angeles look like?
Well, Los Angeles in Ridley Scott's Blade Runner is a combination of a variety of visual influences. On the street level, it's actually highly based off of Hong Kong at the time. Hmm. It's very dense. There's a lot of different cultural influences right there on the street level. The higher up you get, the more and more affluent it is. And the richest, most powerful corporate people live in basically what look like industrial pyramids. And then the surrounding areas, and we get these big wide vistas of what Los Angeles looks like. And if you're from Los Angeles, you know how sprawling it is, but you also know it doesn't look super industrial. Well, that was one of the other influences where Ridley Scott wanted it to look like the industrial parts of Great Britain at the time. Hmm. So you have a lot of spires, you have a lot of machineries, you have that's where a lot of the work is, because it's a very technologically based culture at that point.
So he does use, Ridley Scott, real places in L.A., iconic places in L.A., the Ennis House by Frank Lloyd Wright, the Bradbury Building.
Yeah, where the famous, big climax takes place.
Yeah.
And those things tend to be like the Bradbury Building is falling apart in Blade Runner. Like, history is kind of dying, as you can kind of see.
And
like,
now
the world is wasting.
In real life, it's not. It's beautiful.
It looks great. And that's actually really, really nice. You know, to create the world that Blade Runner suggested LA would turn into, we would have had to have started building stuff before Blade Runner came out. Like 30 something years to create vast vistas of giant, you know, techno pyramids and all that kind of stuff. Like, we would have had to get started like pretty quick in order to catch up to where Blade Runner wanted us to be. But it did predict that there would be an extreme lack of interest in history. And fortunately, we're not there. Fortunately, we actually do care somewhat about our Los Angeles history. Some of our icons are gone, but a lot of them are doing just fine.
What it does do is celebrate diversity.
There's a lot of diversity.
And that is Los Angeles.
Yeah, Edward James Olmos plays a character who's an amalgam of a variety of different cultural influences. There's a lot of advertising, for example, that uses Japanese iconography.
There's that smiling geisha that you see over and over again on
exactly.
the side of the building.
And they even had, I remember when in LA we started having like video billboards Like, uh-huh. And we have them, like, you go around the mall and they're like flat screen TVs that have been turned into video billboards for everything. And then when you drive around, there are fewer now, but we started building that. I'm like, that's Blade Runner. That would seem so ridiculously futuristic when it came out. And it makes perfect sense to me that the one thing that Blade Runner would 100%, like, technology would catch up to would be marketing. Building things, not so much. We're not going to say, like, we're not going to build a bunch of housing. No.
Yeah.
But the billboards we're going to get to.
Exactly.
Really important.
So some other funny kind of dated notes in the movie. He's reading newspapers. People read newspapers.
We still have newspapers.
I know we do, but people don't read them in public that much.
You make it sound like a secret shame.
It is.
I'm secretly reading
not a
newspaper.
Shame, a secret. Yeah. It's like, ooh, newspaper. It's a secret thrill is what it is.
Video payphones.
We have video phones, obviously.
We do. Payphones are kind of dead. Well, again, people didn't predict the prevalence of cell phones.
Yeah.
This was
1982.
In retrospect, some sci-fi did, actually. Like Star Trek, for example, predicted the cell phone, even the flip phone. In a lot of ways, but we just didn't predict how prevalent and how distinct they would be. A lot of the computers in Blade Runner have futuristic technological elements, like the ability to scan an image in a way that I still think even today we'd have trouble doing, but the actual readouts look like Pong. Like, they didn't think people would need, like, really sophisticated, nice-looking readouts. It would all be very utilitarian. That's something that Ridley Scott puts in a lot of his sci-fi, the idea that things aren't necessarily made to be attractive, they're made to be used.
He's a Scotsman. He's practical.
Well, fair enough.
One thing I think is interesting is the idea of bringing humanity to robots, which is something that we are trying to do now with Siri and Alexa. And all that. I just want to play a clip from the movie where Deckard is testing Rachel, played by Sean Young, to see whether or not she's a replicant.
All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can. It's your birthday. Someone gives you a calfskin wallet.
I wouldn't accept it. Also, I'd report the person who gave it to me to the police.
You've got a little boy. He shows you his butterfly collection, plus the killing jar.
I take him to the doctor.
You're watching television. Suddenly you realize there's a wasp crawling on your arm.
I'd kill it.
Well, I think we can still distinguish between real and artificial intelligence, or maybe we can when it comes to being online and interacting with bots.
Well, we've had this test for a long time. We call it the Turing test, named after computer designer Alan Turing, where the idea is we test an artificial intelligence to see if it's distinguishable from human intelligence. And then the question then becomes, if it's indistinguishable from human intelligence,
What's the difference?
What is the difference? Who are we to judge? And if we've created something that is so intelligent that we cannot tell the difference between that and humanity, who are we to take things away from it? And that's the fundamental idea in Blade Runner, is that the things that we have created, the technology we have created, now wants rights. They want, you know, we've created this, like, sort of what do you call it? Controlled obsolescence, when like your iPhone dies and you're just like, that's very suspicious. This is like a month before the new one comes out. And you think to yourself, maybe Apple has a scheme. Well, in Blade Runner, there very much is a scheme. And they are just killing off these robots before they can live so long that they get so intelligent that they can actually rise up. So,
which people are now saying or warning about, futurists are warning about, is happening very soon, imminently, if not now.
Yeah, no, we have the capacity to make things that make their own decisions and learn so rapidly and consume so much data from the internet that they can get away from us. Like, we've all heard stories about people who, like, created, like, an artificial intelligence to, like, go on the internet, and then within a couple of weeks it was saying something really racist because there's a lot of that rhetoric out there. So that's a genuine concern, and it's something that we have been dealing with, I mean, geez, at least since Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. That's kind of the birth of modern sci-fi, is the idea of what we create can come back to haunt us. But also, when we become gods, the things that we create have just as much validity as a human being. Rutger Hauer in this movie in particular, I feel, gives a really haunting performance as your iPhone, who just doesn't want to be replaced with a new iPhone, and who is trying to track down the Apple company and say, hey, don't make me obsolete. Don't cancel me. And there's something really tragic and beautiful about his performance. And he talks about all the things that he has done, all the things that he has accomplished, and how when he's gone, they just shove him in a drawer. He's nothing. All those experiences are lost. He has no one to share them with, no one to give them to. It's a lonely life to be your iPhone.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Ten Hauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears.
Time to die.
Also, particularly poignant because Rutger Hauer did die this year.
Rutger Hauer, I really do feel, was one of the best and often most underappreciated actors of his generation. And he brought so much depth. And he really took this character seriously. And that speech you just heard, a lot of that was ad-libbed. That was him just being in character. And I love that speech. That speech is so evocative because he's talking about he's seen things you wouldn't believe. And then he's describing things that we have no frame of reference for. Sea beams on fire off the Tannhauser Gate?
What does that even mean?
We'll never know because he isn't there to tell us anymore. He died. He spoke of the most beautiful thing you've ever heard of, and you'll never know. That is so tragic. And this is right after he was trying to kill Harrison Ford because he's angry. He doesn't want to die. Who would?
Should we ask Siri what that means?
I'm a little afraid of what happens if we do, but fair enough.
William, it's been so much fun having you.
Thank you so much. Yes, and everyone watch Blade Runner. It's readily available. See the final cut if you can. I think that's the best version of the film. There's a ton out there, and everyone always asks me which version to watch. I think the final cut is the ultimate experience.
Okay. The final cut, watch it this month for sure.
Definitely.
November 2019 in L.A.
Because after this month, it all takes place in the past. It becomes history. Blade Runner is a thing that happened last month.
William Bibbiani, film critic and co-host of the podcast Cancel Too Soon and critically acclaimed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure about that early 80s Vangelis that actually translates to 2019.
I mean, you could watch Blade Runner 2049, where I think San Diego is a trash dump. I don't know.
Same movie, Michelle. No, Michelle Loy in the house with some listener feedback. Hi.
So we asked people how they're feeling about impeachment inquiry. Are you fatigued, listeners? Apparently the answer is yes, because
they're not answering.
Nobody's answering.
You've tuned us out.
They've tuned
well.
Us out. But Joyce does say, heck no, I'm not fatigued. Bring it on. So apparently unpopular opinion, Joyce. But, you know, we are where we are.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Thanks for not being fatigued and coming in today. Don't forget, you can download or subscribe to the Press Play podcast. Listen whenever, wherever you want at kcrw.com/pressplay. I'm Madeline Brand. I will see you tomorrow.